Hey guys, welcome into another episode of From the Wing. I'm Christian Clark, the Pelicans beat writer for NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune. A lot going on in Pelicans land today. We're going to talk about James Borrego. We are going to get to a little bit of draft stuff at the end and just talk about the trio of Zion Williamson, Brandon Ingram, and CJ McCollum. I feel like there's been a lot of talk bubbling up about the viability of them moving forward. But I feel like we got to start with this. Zion Williamson going to be a father. There was a YouTube vlog, Zion and his partner, they published today. Zion looked very happy. He looked very fit. Those are my main takeaways.
Those are the takeaways. I'll add two more takeaways. I'm a fresh dad, have some things in common here. I'm going to say there's two very clear positive possibilities here. This could mean, for one, he already looks good and he looks happy, and that's where we need to start. But there are two great ways this could go. Either A, he is now a heavily dedicated dad in the early days of this thing, and he is going to be parenting his ass off while being a professional basketball player, and that is just going to leave absolutely no room for bullshit, which that's great. That's good stuff. Stay out of the Wendy's drive-thru. We've talked about this. The other possibility, say he doesn't enjoy, you know, the days of parenting so much, because it can be a cruel mistress at times. You know, you might need an escape. Tell you what, you better have a great excuse for your wife when you need to escape the baby. You basically only have a couple of ways you could do this. If it has to do with how you make your money and how you make the family whole, you usually get a pass on that. So if he wants to go spend time in the gym, that's probably his way out. So there's your two scenarios. Definite positives to me. He could either be the guy with not enough time for foolishness, or the guy that needs an escape, and the only acceptable escape to his lady is going to work. You can go to work. That's the only place you can go. Otherwise, you're in here. Get on this diaper. This is good stuff. Good news.
What can you say when Zion Williamson says, "I'm going to the gym"?
Absolutely nothing. Yeah, good luck, sir. Bring home the bacon, but not real bacon.
Not Baconators. Yeah, man. Good. I mean, good for him. He looked very happy. Cool development. Let's talk about the composition of Willie Green's staff to switch gears a little bit. A couple weeks ago, we talked about, you know, the Pelicans potentially adding James Borrego. They finally did that over the weekend, finalizing a deal with Borrego to be the associate head coach of this team. My understanding is that him and Jaren Collins will both be associate head coaches. Jaren handled the defense last year. Pelicans finished sixth. I would imagine he would remain there. And I think Borrego will get a lot of control over the offense. So, you know, I think what this structure looks like right now is basically you got Willie Green, you know, top of the organizational chart or whatever. And then you got Jaren Collins on the defense and James Borrego on the offense. I think that sounds good. Like, I think that sounds like three good guys, you know, atop your coaching staff. What were your thoughts on the Pels getting it done with Borrego?
Yeah, we talked about him a little bit. I'm excited that they got it done, especially since, you know, whether this is real or artificial, like as soon as we talked about the idea that they had reached out to Borrego, like a bunch of teams started popping up as being interested in him, including the Nets for the head coaching slot. And so you started hearing his name percolate around the league. And you're like, oh, okay. And then it seemed like it was kind of like us or Milwaukee were going to get him or Stotts. Like it just felt like there's a proven former head coach that is available to be an assistant that's going to go to Milwaukee and one that's going to go to New Orleans. And we just like didn't know which one it might be. But it's cool that it's still Borrego. It's cool to hear him get, like, you know, clearly positive reviews around the league and then land here, and they come through on what they wanted. And it's an offensive guy after a year where the complaint is, you know, what are you going to do about the offense? And it's a clear upgrade there.
Yeah. I mean, the Pelicans are 20th in points scored per 100 possessions last season. I think a lot of that was just their best players didn't play basketball very often. But I think there were some things that Willie Green and the staff could have been doing better, for sure. You know, Borrego and Kevin Ollie were the two names I heard the most about. Hey, maybe they could come aboard. those two kind of got announced by Woj at the same time. Kevin Ollie going to Brooklyn, Borrego coming to New Orleans. I wonder if it was related at all of like, well, here's how much we have to offer to both of you, or if they wanted one or the other. I don't know, but it was interesting that they both got popped like around the same time. You know, like the word on Borrego when I asked around is like the guy really knows offense, how to coach offense. If you just look at like the numbers for that Charlotte Hornets team, you know, their last year when Borrego was in charge of it, that was the 2021-2022 season when they won 43 games, by the way. You know, they're top 10 in a bunch of different categories, like overall points scored per 100 possessions, pace, three-point shots, like playing a modern, fast-paced style, things Willie Green, you know, has talked about wanting to play. I don't know that the Pelicans have always did it last year. And it, you know, it definitely doesn't hurt when your best two guys miss a combined 90 games or whatever. But I think it's great he's coming aboard. I was told that the relationship with Willie Green was a driving force for getting this deal done. Borrego coached Willie Green twice. He was an assistant on the 2010-2011 Hornets team that Monty Williams was in charge of. That was Willie's one season in New Orleans. And then he was an assistant coach in Orlando, became the interim coach when Jacque Vaughn got fired in 2014-15. Willie Green, that was his last season. I think he was 33 years old. Borrego was playing him even at the end. And, you know, you can go find the old Orlando Sentinel article of like, Willie Green, old reliable, I'm still going to go with him. So there's clearly a trust factor there. I just think he checked a lot of boxes. I just really like the move. And like, when you look at Borrego's four season run in Charlotte, his last three seasons, here were their win totals, 23, 33, 43. Like they clearly got better in terms of just winning and losing when he was there. Like there was positive improvement, and they had LaMelo Ball at the end, who I think is a nice piece. You know, Miles Bridges before, you know, he was suspended for, you know, I believe assaulting his girlfriend or wife. I can't remember which. You know, he was a good player for them. They had Gordon Hayward for some of that. But like, there were some nice pieces, but like, it's not like they had a killer roster or anything. Like, Borrego was cooking a good meal with some meh ingredients, in my opinion, at the end.
Yeah. So what the big thing there is, like, he had a really young team. Then he had some, you know, some guys that he made more valuable flatly. Like, Scary Terry becomes Scary Terry playing for James Borrego. You thought when he moves on from Boston that paying him was a bad deal, and then he starts playing, you're like, oh, maybe Boston should have kept him. That was immediately the conversation. Then you have, like, yes, he had Miles Bridges. He had Miles Bridges when the breakout occurred. Like, Miles Bridges becoming a solid, like, a real viable guy, that's when he had him. The thing he never had there was a front court of any substance whatsoever. He was rolling out 73 games started of a Plumlee brother and Bismack Biyombo on the back end of the deal from 2016, where he got monster payday and was just hanging out in Charlotte. He did not have, which, hey, meant to be in New Orleans again. Like, don't know what my center situation is going to be necessarily. Don't know if I have the right pieces there. He's used to it. He's done it before. He played non-starters. He has Jonas for now. It'll be really interesting. He made their offense pop. He made them better by double digit wins year over year that he was there. And then he ends up fired. We'll say he's fired because they no show in two consecutive play-in games. However, this is kind of just like the stories around this are Michael Jordan makes the choice to move on from Borrego. Michael Jordan goes back to Steve Clifford, who he had worked with previously after Kenny Atkinson bails on the job. Michael Jordan does this thing poorly, and he likes to have people around him that he's dealt with before where he knows that they're going to do what he wants them to do. He kind of accused Borrego of not coaching them to be better defenders. Dude, he didn't have a defender on the team. So I don't know what you wanted with that roster.
Yeah, I was going back and like looking at some of the reaction when he got canned, and a lot of it was like, I can't believe this guy just got fired. Like, this guy's done a really nice job, and there has been tangible progress in his time here. I mean, it really did seem like an instance of, you know, impatient and not great owner. Sorry, MJ, love you, but yeah. I mean, he seems like he's a good coach. You know, like there's a lot of different indicators that that Borrego can just coach, man.
Yeah. And it just, you know, years and years of a Plumlee and Bismack Biyombo as your center rotation. And Plumlee like had to really play heavy, heavy minutes. And I think we're, you know, Plumlee's fine as like a rotational backup guy, like interesting passer and stuff. But he's just, if you're going to play a run and gun style, you're going to get up a lot of threes. You're going to run. Plumlee can't do that. And Biyombo is so offensively limited that you don't necessarily want him to do it either. It's just, he just never had that, the center to complete what that picture was. And they still got top 10 offense out of that pile of stuff. So it, that just bodes really well for what we have here. He's got a lot of stuff to play with here. He's got a lot of athleticism and a lot of size to mess around with. And to, I'm very interested to see what he does in terms of generating 3-point shooting out of this team, because it's something his teams do and we got to find it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was something that Willie Green talked about time and time again last year. We want to get more threes up, but the Pelicans didn't always do a good job of that. And, you know, part of it, I think, was, you know, they just don't have a lot of shooters overall. I think that's definitely part of it. You know, Brandon Ingram, that was someone that Willie Green mentioned specifically time and time again. He's got to get more threes up. He's got to get more threes up. And they never were really able to get him to do that. You know, they got Brandon to do that when Alvin Gentry was the coach. And those 3-point attempts have just kind of fallen steadily in New Orleans. I think that's something that has got to creep back next year for BI. When you just look at the changes that we know about and have been reported about in New Orleans so far this offseason, Aaron Nelson at minimum will, if he's back next year, will come back in a reduced role. There's a chance he's not around the team. I guess we'll see how that plays out. They got Borrego. I think, you know, we'll still see, but it just brings me to an overall larger point. I think Griff is a smart executive. I think he's a good executive. I think he's made, quite frankly, like a lot of mistakes since taking over New Orleans. But the one thing I'll say is that he is pretty adaptable. Like, he'll look at stuff and just be like, okay, well, I thought this, but it didn't work. And I think we have to change this. And I think that is a mostly good quality. Like, he's definitely not stubborn. Like, the Stan Van Gundy thing was his call. Like, people right under him, I don't want to say their names, but like, they were I don't think they were real supportive of the Stan Van Gundy hire. Like, that was Griff going out on a limb, be like, no, we're getting Stan Van Gundy. I mean, it was a catastrophe, basically. And Griff moved off of it after 8 months. And I think this offseason is another example of him, you know, being fairly adaptable. Like, Aaron Nelson was his guy. I mean, every single person I texted about that was like, wow, that was Griff's guy. I can't believe he did that. So he does seem to be an adaptable executive from what we've seen from him in New Orleans so far.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, that's one of the big things of successful leadership. Like, I think the only real, like, the overarching mistake from Griff is just over promising because he's in front of a microphone too often. I think that's, like, at the end of the day, the things that hurt the most are the things that it felt like were promised to us that never delivered. And had he just never promised them that way, we wouldn't have felt as weird about it.
No, I think that's one of the big things in just, you know, failing to have the relationship with Zion. Like, I think that was just completely misplayed. Yeah, and then it's been a struggle to get back on track, but continue.
Yeah. So I think part of it is just like, if he were a little bit quieter, I don't think we'd judge him necessarily the same. Like, you'd still have the Zion thing. Like, that is not not a good situation yet. It has not been a good situation. Clearly that would still loom, but you wouldn't have all this stuff to point to. Cause for the most part, like, he is able to acknowledge when he's got something wrong. And like, at the very least, he can do that. Now, it comes off a little weird when you back the guy, or you back a play, or you back a person 100%. And then you are willing to pivot. That pivot feels worse when that person or that thing is built up to be so much. It makes it feel like, why'd you make the decision in the first place? But overall, I think it's a good thing that, you know, for any leader in across any job whatsoever, to be able to acknowledge that something you did, even if it's not even necessarily wrong. Like, I can make a great argument that Aaron Nelson did his job pretty damn well overall and got kind of sabotaged by the fact that his stars were unavailable due to their own issues. But it is the only thing you can alter, and you have to alter whatever you can to get the stars on the floor more. That is the only way that this thing gets done, is if those guys are playing. If there's any way that moving him around or taking power away from him makes that better, you've got to do it. You have to rip every damn thing that you can. Every option that you have has to get hit. And this is just like what was changeable. So the two things that were left on the table, your offensive, your like lead offensive mind and your head of athletic training, your head of sports science, whatever his title was, those two things are now changed. Looking at you, Z, I'm looking at you, Brandon Ingram. There are no excuses anymore. This is entirely on you now. No one is going to sit here. None of the fans are going to sit here now and say, oh, well, clearly now it's the next guys that came. It's their fault. No. You both have to play more than 60 games or it is entirely at your feet.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that sentiment. I think that was something I expressed a lot on our previous episode. The one thing I would add to the Nelly conversation, and I do think he got dealt a pretty bad hand in terms of your main two guys are, you know, just kind of brittle. They have been brittle the past couple of years. But the one thing I would say is, there have been a lot of people who've just been here who have not liked working with him. And then, you know, when you just look at like the totality of bad relationships, like that's just not a great sign. And there are some people that like really like him. And like, even I heard from some people who are like, ah, man, he's getting a raw deal who work for the team right now. But, you know, like two of the three head coaches, those are bad relationships. There've been a handful of players, I think more than even Zion and Brandon, where it's like, I'm not sure that this is the best relationship. And it's like, I'm sure Aaron Nelson has forgotten more about his field than I could ever learn if I spent the rest of my life learning about it. It seems extremely knowledgeable, like incredible reputation before he came here. But you also just have to say, like, there's been a lot of relationships where these people haven't liked you. And I think that matters.
Yeah. And that's part of just like this generation of the NBA. Like, the game has changed. As much as we may like it or not like it, the players, the relationships you have with your stars guide your entire team now. If those relationships are not 100% solid, things can go bad in a hurry anywhere. There's a disgruntled superstar waiting around every corner every season. You have to do everything you can to mend that stuff. So if you haven't adapted to that, if you're not pliable and working with them to try to find a solution rather than necessarily like implementing the thing that you think works and trying to force them to do what you want. If it's not a compromise of some kind, if you're not both coming to the table, it can get bad in a hurry. Like, unfortunately or fortunately, that's the era we live in. You have to placate your stars and your players to some degree. If you don't give there, that's a quick doom. That's a quick road to being done with the league. And that's just like, that's not going away. That's not going away in the social media era. Like, there is more player agency now than there has ever been. They better like you. They better at least respect you so much so that even if they don't like you, they do what you say. You got to have one or the other.
Yeah, it's tough, man. Like, look at the two teams who were in the finals. Who were the best players in each team? Nikola Jokic and Jimmy Butler. Like, those are...
must be nice.
Incredible franchise players. Like, those guys cover up so much stuff just because of who they are, you know, kind of as players and leaders. You know, hopefully some guys on the roster can get there. I guess let's just talk about, you know, like, the core of this team going forward, because, you know, my kind of assumption is that if I had to bet on it today, I would say that I think that Zion, Brandon, CJ are all back next year. But I do think there is a chance that there are like deals explored for one of those guys, you know, just because, like, you know, in the season and a half, there haven't been great results in the playoffs. And I know they haven't been playing together that long. And the other part is, you know, I just think they're looking at this and it's like, okay, three guys who are making, you know, about $30 million, like, it's going to be tough to keep that together long term. So I'm just going to make you the GM of this team for the next 10 minutes. If it was up to you, would you keep this trio intact? Would you be sniffing around on stuff?
So I think this is one of those things where, you know, I haven't managed a sports team, but I will tell you that, like, I have just spent 3 years managing a team. You're never just sitting still. You can't ever just sit still. So even if you think you're locked into these three for the next 3 years,
but they were still sitting still last summer. They sat still last summer.
You're still talking to people, though. You're still exploring. You're still thinking. It may not be that you're going to do anything, but you're going to take any and every call. You're going to have every conversation. You're going to see what's possible because you have to. It behooves you to do so. I think trying to decide, personally, I have no desire to separate those three. None. Because I think we just wasted an entire year. If we didn't waste an entire year and we saw it out there and we saw things not working with one or two of them, then that's one thing. What I saw that season was CJ shred his hand, giving everything he could for the team. BI play a good portion of the season, but not enough, and play really well at the end of the year. And I saw Zion get hurt again. I saw guys' reputations just live up to what they've always been, unfortunately. And until I see them play together, I can't make a decision. Now, I maybe push this season into an unfortunate position where I have to make a choice because, again, it doesn't come together. But we have to get to a mass of games that they have played together. I do not believe that CJ that you saw last year and the utilization that you saw from CJ last year is what the team intends for him to be if Zion and Brandon are healthy. I think we all know that. So to judge CJ and his play and his performance based on that and suggest that, like, he needs to be like the top two players on your team, that's not what he's here to do. And I just want to see them play that first before I decide to move off of them. But I also see a world where, again, something unfortunate happens this season and you just can't stick with this again. You just can't. You can't keep combining the same pieces. It's not going to come together and you just can't stay on it much longer. And I think it will just depend what happens this season in terms of who that player would be that you'd want to move off of.
Yeah, I mean, I think an interesting part of this question or whatever is that Griffin's been here 4 years and, you know, like, they have, you know, they won the lottery in a great year to win the lottery. At least that's what people thought, you know, leading up to it. He got to make the Anthony Davis trade to get stuff back, and the highest they finish is ninth place. I would imagine at some point you have to show results to keep your job. And I don't know, like, I'm wondering if he feels like, we have to, like, make the playoffs outright for me to be back next year, you know. And I think that would factor into, like, well, do you trade one of these main three guys and get, like, a young player and, you know, maybe take a little bit of step back in the hopes that you take two steps forward eventually. You know, but, like, I feel like, look, Zion's going into year one of a 5-year extension. If he can ever freaking play, you know, get in shape and some things click, like, he can be the best player in a team that makes the Western Conference Finals, that makes the finals. Like, there's really no doubt in my mind. You can't trade him under any circumstance to me. CJ?
You're never going to get the right value either.
No.
You can't unless he plays.
It's too early.
And if he does play, you can't trade him. Like,
it's too early to think about trading Zion. If this next season goes, you know, the way three of the four seasons have gone so far, okay, maybe, you know, maybe that's a discussion you have. But to me, it's too early. CJ, you know, are you going to trade the guy who, like, one of the few guys who actually, like, showed up to work every day and did his job last year? I mean, you could. I mean, it is a business. But, like, if they are going to make a move, and I'm not advocating that they are. I'm just saying, if they did make a move and you're having to bet on which one of those guys was on the move, as a guy with 2 years left on his deal, who is an incredible talent, but just hasn't been able to really drive winning the way you would have liked so far.
I just had a realization, and a pardon the tangent, but this is going to have to be the season that we call Zion Big Papa. And I can't believe I didn't realize it sooner. Like, if we get then with the number of Notorious B.I.G. references that we've gotten, he is now Big Papa, and this is the year he's going to come through. This is the year of Big Papa. It's all going to work out. I just, it all just came to me. It's all going to work out now.
I'll be happy if I see Zion wearing a girl dad bucket hat. That'll bring me some joy. I'll start knitting that. Yeah, go ahead.
These guys, like, I just think, you know, you can't separate them. And like you said, like, I honestly think, I think Zion, the mythology and the curse of Zion is that you're never going to be able to trade him, because if he does play, he is an outright star and it's very clear and you can't give that up. And if he doesn't play, you're never going to get the commensurate value necessary to make you feel comfortable to give up the star that you did see. I think you're stuck. I don't think there's a realistic place. You'd have to be so poisoned on the relationship to quit on that, to take back the crap that you'd get if he doesn't play, if he got hurt again. You can't possibly give him up.
He's too good, and there's too many years left on his deal. I think it just comes down to that. Let me ask you about Ingram. So Woj put out the other day that he's going to play for Team USA this summer. You know, FIBA World Cup, that's going to be in the Philippines. Do you look at that as a positive, that he's going to be around, you know, some other really good players? He's going to be hooping this summer. Like, do you like that?
I do. So I like it because I like anything that gets him, you know, we've seen guys have international play jumps. We've seen guys like take that kind of play and then come into the year and have a huge year. It'll be nice for like the recognition of him. I love it for him as a person, but I'm not gonna lie. When I saw the tweet, when I saw he was going to be on there, I had two reactions. One, that's cool. A Pelican going to play for the international team. And when you look at the roster of guys, like, he's going to be one of the best players on the team thus far in terms of people that have committed. So like he may be the star of the team. That would be a really cool spot for him if he becomes like the Carmelo Anthony of FIBA. However, my second reaction was, goddamn, what injury is he going to pick up playing in FIBA that he's going to miss the first goddamn 2.5 months with?
I mean, definitely a toe contusion, right? Right toe contusion?
Pinky toe contusion. I don't know. Left pinky contusion. I don't know. You know, gum recession, hard case of gingivitis. I don't know. Whatever. Doesn't appear to take that much. But yeah, so dual reaction. Could see it being an overwhelming positive. Could see it being a cool spot for him. Especially if they go and kick ass and he gets to be like a star in that, could do a lot for his game and do a lot for him, like melding into the season. And also, like, I'm just terrified he's going to, you know, sprain a sesamoid something or other.
I can already see Willie Green at media day in September saying, oh, we're not sure Brandon will be ready for the start of training camp. He's dealing with athlete's foot. Day to day. We're hoping to get him back in the court soon.
You're just stating my nightmares. You're just my nightmares right now. So yeah, that's how I feel about it. I feel about the Pelicans pretty much every year. Overwhelmed with joy and fraught with fear at the same time.
The athlete's
pretty much
thing
describes my whole tenure.
The athlete's foot thing just made me think of in the locker room, JV would spray this stuff on his feet after games to make sure, you know, he didn't get athlete's feet, you know, like whatever that stuff is.
And tough actin, like, tenactin?
Yeah, tough actin, tenactin, and it would like make you choke, you know, if you're standing like 20 feet within him, because he would just spray it. Oh, he'd hold down the trigger for like 10 seconds. He'd be like,
look, people remember John Madden for Madden football and for being the coach of the Oakland Raiders and all this stuff. People remember him for being a commentator. I'm going to remember him for the tough acting, tenactin commercials. Boom. Tough acting, tenactin. I pulled that completely out of my ass, and it's only because of John Madden. It's the only reason.
Was John Madden like Like, I feel like Shaq is the athlete who can hawk any single product today. And like, you'll come away like, you know, kind of amused, be like, oh, that was funny. I love Shaq. Like, okay. Like this made me think slightly more positively about this brand that he just hawked. Was John Madden that guy?
Yeah, absolutely. Because he could take anything and be like, well, you see here, now what you got is you have this guy over here and he's thinking about something else. And then next thing you know, boom, he's got athlete's foot. What's he going to do about it? I don't know. Maybe tough acting, tin acting. And you're like, I feel romanticized now. I am going to buy a can of tough. I don't even have athlete's foot. I'm going to go buy this because, you know, I got the same. It's the same pitch every time. The one thing about Shaq has like a way that he speaks. Madden had a specific thing that he did. He would essentially like turn this into a play call. He'd like psychoanalyze somebody in a way that's very obscure, then just say boom. And then next thing you know, tough acting, tin acting. There we are. Yeah, I'd put it on anything. He could sell me anything. Just pick something up off of your desk. Yeah, he could sell me these glasses, no problem. He could sell me some crystal. I think that
John Madden helped popularize the turd Dunkin' too. I think that was a story that I read on NOLA.com. Yeah, he was, you know, he was a huge turd Dunkin' guy, and you know, word of mouth got around, and then the turd Dunkin' became like a huge thing nationally.
Don't knock until you tried it.
Yeah, it's my good. Dad it's made a turd Dunkin' 1 year, and it was excellent, man. Big fan of the turd Dunkin'. A lot of work that goes into it, labor intensive.
Yeah, you know, you just gotta, you know, you gotta make sure that when you stuff it, you gotta stuff it with your strong hand.
Hey, you can't be doing that with your weak hand.
Scary movie reference for those that partake.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for listening. Next week, we're going to be talking some NBA draft. I think we're going to have a guest on the show. Talk to you again soon.
Ooh, draft stuff's coming.